Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Nirup Krishnamurthy to the broadcast. Most recently, Nirup was the Executive Vice President and Chief Technology Officer at the Northern Trust Bank. During every year of Nirup's tenure there, Northern Trust was listed in the top 100 in the Information Week 500 ranking of the top innovators in business technology, including a placement at number 12 in the most recent ranking released in September 2008. Northern Trust was also consistently ranked among Computer World's 100 best places to work in IT during Nirup's time with the bank. From 1990 to 2005, Nirup held various positions in the Information Services Division at United Airlines, and for his last 3 years with the airline, he was Vice President and Chief Information Officer. He has been lauded as one of the key leaders who led the company out of Chapter 11. Nirup has held board positions at multiple companies in his country of origin, India. Nirup has a PhD in industrial engineering from the State University of New York at Buffalo. I recently caught up with Nirup by phone in Chicago. Our conversation covered all five world-class IT principles, as well as other topics. Nirup Krishnamurthy, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thanks, Pete. Glad to be here.
Well, Nirup, since we're talking about world-class IT today, it seems like you're in some ways a very well-positioned person to speak about the concept of world-class as somebody who, of course, has been based here in the U.S. for some time and worked for a couple of major organizations in Northern Trust and United Airlines most recently. But you've also done a lot of business in some of the emerging or newer IT powerhouses, most importantly India, where you hail from originally. And I'm wondering if you can speak a little bit about the differences that you're seeing in some of the emerging IT powerhouses versus the U.S., and in fact, what each can learn from the other.
Yes, Pete. And yes, I am originally from India, but really I've been here now for the past 20-plus years. And I have seen countries like India and China develop over the last 15 years, and I'm glad to say I have been closely associated with some of that development. Mm-hmm. You know, globalization of IT has been evolving, as I said, for the past really two decades. While India still maintains the largest share of IT outsourcing revenues, you know, countries like China, and areas like Eastern Europe, Far East, and even South America have made significant gains in the recent past. IT powerhouses such as Infosys, TCS, Cognizant, and even companies like IBM and Accenture now have gone global and have set up operations in many of the locations I talked about and even others across the globe. So I believe these firms are, you know, migrating towards a global operating model, a model in which there is, you know, continuous development, 24/7 development, as well as, you know, local time zone support for customers across the globe. Having said that, these firms, these Indian firms in particular, are yet to climb up the value chain. They have been very, very successful in meeting the needs of, you know, IT development, so to speak, and IT infrastructure management. I think, but they're yet to get into the high end of the spectrum in terms of providing strategic advice, strategic solutions to firms in the U.S. So I think that's what each country can give each other. The U.S. can clearly provide that capability to these Indian firms, and the U.S. also needs to take advantage of what these Indian firms need to offer to help improve speed to market and quality. In addition to, you know, the key criteria, which is to maintain a very competitive cost structure for IT.
I think these are great points, Nirup. I wonder, as somebody who has overseen the expansion of U.S.-based organizations to incorporate a greater percentage of the workforce, be they employees or contractors, using some of the firms, in fact, that you've already mentioned,
What guidance would you have for an organization that is primarily domestically focused or one geography focused, who's now thinking about sticking its toe in the waters of a more global organization? What are some of the steps that or lessons learned that you've taken with you from your time at the major organizations you've worked with, as you've done just that?
Couple of key points. One is the first step really is to convince your own organization that globalization is needed.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point.
That is really the first and the most important step.
Mm-hmm.
And once you have your leaders aligned behind this globalization approach, then you go through a series of steps and there are things to avoid when you actually go into a global model. Most companies typically start off with this concept of staff augmentation with these global firms, you know, offshore or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that while it may be a good start initially, needs to be limited in scope.
Speak more to that if you would, because I think in some ways it's perhaps different from how a lot of organizations think about things. I'm really interested in hearing more about that.
Right. I mean, staff augmentation in my mind is when there is a team in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
that needs, you know, X more hours of work to be done.
Exactly.
And those X hours are shipped to these developing countries or
exactly.
developing organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and staff augmentation is actually is a very complex game, because unless you're able to define exactly what you need to get done, and in terms of inputs and outputs, and be able to
yes.
and able to transfer that those requirements effectively over, it becomes very hard to actually implement.
Yep, very interesting.
So and most of us in the U.S. are, unless you're a minimum level 5 organization or 3-plus organization, find it very hard to do that, because we are here trying to meet the needs of the business as opposed to writing detailed specs.
Yes.
For an offshore kind of right. And so that's my view on this, which is staff augmentation, while it is a good experiment to begin with, should be
yes.
quickly curbed, and we should move towards models such as holistic application support.
I see.
Or a fixed bid project, end-to-end projects
mm-hmm.
that are handed off to these firms. SLA-based support.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. So that's a little more structured around support and less about people or staff.
Mm-hmm.
There's a more results or outcome-based contracts is what you need to develop with these firms.
That's all really interesting points, and I think you point out a chief concern that I know a lot of IT executives have when they go to a staff augmentation model, of just as you put it so well, that the managing of bits and pieces of work can actually end up wasting a tremendous amount of time of your valuable resources here at home. And so I like that thought about making sure that they have full, discrete pieces of work where they have end-to-end, where people across the globe have end-to-end responsibility, where there's less hand-holding, less preparation that's necessary.
Mm-hmm. And that requires significant partnership and trust, right? I mean, so when you decide to go global and try to partner with these firms, you need to build up that relationship and trust with these firms.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're able to do it more effectively.
That makes a lot of sense. When you've gone about selecting vendors who can serve your needs in very diverse ways, how have you thought about things? Is it, and I realize, of course, it perhaps there's a degree of it depends on the situation to the logical answer to this, but obviously there's in thinking, for instance, about expanding to some of the new IT powerhouses in Asia, one might think of employing a firm that's based there and primarily there versus having a setting up a partnership with an organization based here with operations there that may be in some ways better suited to expand to other geographies as you see fit. Is there a sort of way in which, a logical way, or a process in which you've employed in thinking about how to do that?
You know, when I was in the process of doing that a long time ago, the landscape was a little different, right? I mean, the Asian companies were primarily Asia-based.
Yes, exactly.
And in fact, home market-based. And all they came here was to shop their wares and take work back to
yes.
their countries and give it to at the lower cost base.
Mm-hmm.
The situation has changed today.
Yes.
All of these companies are global.
Mm-hmm.
They have footprint in many parts of the world.
Yes.
So they're no longer just an India company or a China company.
Mm-hmm.
They are a global firm. And so they're able to meet the needs of organizations both locally as well as from an offshore perspective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So your approach has to be more value proposition based. And value proposition includes, you know, in addition to the cost structure, includes, you know, capability.
Mm-hmm.
It includes... in addition to capability, it also includes local time, you know, the ability to serve the client in the time zone that they seek.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And that has become a key kind of criteria of late.
Mm-hmm.
In order to take the concept of these global firms, these offshore firms, to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that in today's world, the key criteria is cost, capability, and 24/7 support.
I see.
Those are the three criteria I would use, in addition to confidence in the leadership and the management.
Exactly. Great points, all. Very, very interesting. I'd like to take a step back and talk to you a little bit about some of your own experiences and kind of delve into that a little bit further. Obviously, you've had a diverse set of experiences in the past decade, having led IT operations at a major airline as well as a major bank. And for a portion of the time that you were leading the airline, United Airlines, you were actually a key reason, one of the key drivers for the organization's emergence out of Chapter 11, you and the IT department, as opposed to some of your more recent experiences where you were working within the context of a company that was more of a leader in its space. And I'm wondering if you can lend some insights between those, what the differences in those experiences were, the advantages and disadvantages. I know there are some obvious ones, but perhaps there are also some less obvious advantages and disadvantages of operating within the two constructs.
Yes, the situations in both those experiences were clearly very different.
Yes.
At United, the situation was very grim.
Mm-hmm.
I became the CIO during the restructuring period of the company.
Mm-hmm.
But the goals were very clear.
Mm-hmm.
There was a very clear burning platform. And our goal was to restructure the airline and exit the airline from bankruptcy and set it up for future growth.
Yes.
Operating goals and financial goals were clearly laid out for every single business unit inside the company.
Mm-hmm.
So in that setting, you know, IT played a key role in enabling the restructuring.
Mm-hmm.
And ensuring that scarce IT resources were invested in those initiatives that had clear alignment with these goals.
Yes.
You know, senior leaders across United rallied around the common cause, and we became very successful as a team,
mm-hmm.
working with the business. And I would argue that we were a world-class IT organization during that period, since we achieved more with less. We were completely aligned with the business, and we produced the results that were needed to restructure the airline.
Do I recall correctly, even Nirup, that IT budget, in fact, actually went up during that period as it was going down in other places because of the importance of IT in the restructuring and the emergence from Chapter 11?
Yeah, that's an interesting story, because when we first entered bankruptcy, the goal was to cut costs, right? So across
exactly.
the company,
yep.
we cut costs in IT. We dramatically reduced the IT spend.
Mm-hmm.
We reduced the staff. We reduced the leadership to keep it to a bare-bone operation, to ensure that the company can survive.
Yes.
But once we knew we were past that,
mm-hmm.
The business units started developing their plans, for the future growth plans. And And a lot of those plans had an IT underpinning. So, here I was, with a depleted kind of organization, trying to meet these increasing needs of the business.
Yes.
And so, I had to work very closely with the business to realign IT, transform IT, and set it up for growth. And in that period, in the last, I would say the last half of the bankruptcy period, IT expenditures actually went up because IT investments were crucial to actually reduce costs and improve revenues across other parts of the organization. So yes, IT capital spend actually went up.
I think that's a great example of how, and as you point out, in fact, almost paradoxically, that IT can operate in a world-class manner even as the organization is going through a tough time financially speaking, and in fact, be a true leader in the strategic changes that are necessary. I think that as I'm hearing you talk, it's really a story that it might be surprising to a lot of organizations. I mean, the thought of an IT department, even 5, 10 years ago, an IT department at a company of any health being such a strategic enabler for the organization, I think would be a very unusual story. And so I think especially in the context of some of what you were going through there, it's all the more interesting.
Yeah, it is one of my best experiences, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
At Northern Trust, it was a little different. Northern is an industry leader, has been doing very well as an organization, has seen tremendous success throughout its history. And where Northern was positioned is that they were, in the last 5 years, from a business standpoint, had gone significantly global. And have aggressive growth plans for over the next 5, 10 years. And so the challenge there was to set up the IT organization, IT platforms for that growth ahead,
Yes.
as opposed to trying to fix what we had.
Yes.
And in some sense, it is a lot harder because there is not really a clear burning platform that the organization can rally around. So you have to spend a lot more time working with the organization to convince the organization that the transformation is needed. And so it's a different experience, but it is a good one on itself. And we were able to move the needle significantly over the last 3 years
Yes.
within Northern by adapting sound practices within IT to deliver results and by ensuring that the demands that demand management was very transparent across the organization. So we knew exactly where investments were being made and what kind of results could be expected.
Yes.
And really, the transformation was recognized by Information Week. When I started at Northern, we were ranked 75, like in 05. And this year, Northern was ranked 12th.
That's impressive.
And for I think for Innovation Awards, I think.
I see. Well, that's great. I think that's certainly a testament to some of the changes that you undertook with your team.
Yes. But it was not easy, but it was fulfilling.
Well, I want to talk actually a little bit about a topic that you've begun to broach there in terms of finding the best ways to govern IT. And you've spoken about your diverse experiences across the two most recent companies that you've led from an IT perspective, and the challenges and benefits of dealing of operating and leading in one case a company that was in turnaround mode and one that was in a leadership position. And I'm wondering what the steps towards creating a portfolio management or demand management or sound governance practices, what some of the steps that you've undertaken in order to do that effectively have been.
If world-class IT organizations, execute, right,
Yes.
and execute real well, and in order to do that, IT professionals and leaders need to be armed with effective practices that enable them to implement initiatives successfully,
Yes.
right? And for IT leaders, I would say that two key aspects of governance. One is developing that partnership with the business, right? IT demand always exceeds capacity
yes.
of the organization.
Yes.
Right? Ensuring that we are focused on the most important set of initiatives requires IT leadership to have strong relationship with the business, work with the business, understand their priorities, and help them prioritize in a manner that is most aligned with the business strategy.
Okay.
Okay. And at United, my leadership team worked hard to establish credible relationships that allowed effective prioritization of these IT initiatives during the most difficult period of the company's history.
Yes, yes.
And that essentially leads to a very good portfolio management practice.
I see.
Where you can actually look at the IT investment across the organization, mm-hmm. classify them under specific portfolios, every organization could view these portfolios a little differently. And at United, we had these portfolios by cost leadership, revenue, infrastructure, safety, compliance, and so on. So we had this portfolio that were really business-oriented portfolios.
Yes.
And we tied IT initiatives to these portfolios so that we can actually see what kind of results they're going to achieve in that business sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a very effective way of doing it. And the business rallied around it.
I see.
So portfolio management, to me, is a science where business and IT come together to ensure that the value of IT investments are maximized and aligned, mm-hmm. really, with business goals. And so that's kind of step one, I think. I think step two is that about execution, program management or project management,
mm-hmm.
if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most meaningful initiatives these days in large firms or even mid-sized firms are typically long-term in nature, 1 to 2 years or more. It involves many systems requiring integration. It has to deal with several external entities, typically crosses business lines, and requires significant change for people in the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And having a very robust program management practice to ensure that we can, first of all, manage these complex initiatives and sustain them over a longer period of time is so crucial. And the program management also includes effective communication up, down, and across the organization as these programs get implemented. And so, to me, program management is today still not where it should be in most firms. You still see a lot of technology-based initiatives overrunning budgets and time.
Yes.
And I don't know what Gartner stats are, but a small percentage of all these initiatives actually end up on time and on budget.
Exactly.
And so, to me, that's an area of huge opportunity even going forward, is to effectively manage these programs. And it's not about IT program management. It's about managing the entire initiative, which includes IT and the business.
Great point. It seems like there would be a lot of low-hanging fruit there. In fact, it's a place where the organization can realize tangible benefits without having to come up with creative new ideas in order to do so.
Absolutely. And it requires a lot of discipline. For the organization. And so, to me, that's a key step as well to having a successful governance model within IT.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I want to switch, if we can, to Nirup, to people. You've talked, quite eloquently about the acquisition of people as it relates to engaging external partners or vendors. I'm wondering, especially again, given the international focus and responsibilities of your recent positions, how you've thought about hiring people in diverse sections of the world, and hiring employees, and finding the right the sorts of staff to do the jobs that you need, while not watering down the overall employee base in the process.
Well, Pete, you know how I feel about this. You know, people are the lifeline of any organization, you know, let alone IT. But my view has always been that IT is a strategic enabler for the business. So by that definition, you know, IT professionals are strategic partners with the business, more like internal consultants who collaborate with the business to solve their problems.
Yes.
And so any successful IT organization will and should ensure a strong focus on people development and placement. And this will need to happen at really at all levels, you know, of the organization.
Yes.
You know, as companies have gone global, the other transformation that's happening with people is the globalization of jobs. And what you really have been, what we're seeing now, or at least what we've seen in the recent past, is that as companies go global and have operations across other parts of the globe other than just the U.S.,
Exactly.
we have seen an increase in, you know, U.S. expats in the past decades to either help you know, globalize their own firm,
Yes.
you know, in different parts of the world, or help another firm to develop a global footprint. You know, go and work for a global company in China or India
Yes.
and help them set up right management practices and so on. And so, but I think that, you know, that can go on for a while. But I think that what we need to do is to move towards, and I've started doing that recently, is to go for a global sourcing model where, you know, you need a senior manager to run your operation in, you know, London. You know, typically today what happens is you go and look, either you send an expat over or you source in London.
Yes.
And what we are trying to do is to look at a global model because people are today's executives and leaders are willing to move
Yes.
or should be willing to move. And we need to look globally for talent, regardless of where the job is located. And that's, I think, a significant shift companies will over time do, is to find the right person for the right job, regardless of the location, and try to get them there.
That's great.
So I think that transformation is starting to happen now. Because I think people are tired of expats, if you will.
Understood, understood.
And the expats themselves are getting tired.
Yeah, exactly. This has been a great conversation. In conclusion, I wanted to ask you a more open-ended question about what you're seeing is, and obviously you've already talked about, I think, some very important trends, but are there other ideas that we've not covered that you see as rising to the top of agendas of CIOs' lists, CIOs like yourself, their list, their checklist, their to-do list as they're contemplating the future?
Yeah, a couple of points. One is on the infrastructure. I'll talk about that.
Okay.
And then I'll talk about where I think the CIOs over the next decade, what my thoughts are on that.
Great.
You know, it wouldn't surprise anyone when I say that a reliable, robust, and a scalable IT infrastructure is the foundation needed to enable new capabilities and innovation in any organization, right? However, you know what, at least what I've seen, and when I've talked to people, my peers, and even with my own experience, many organizations often tend to manage and maintain their infrastructure on an as-needed basis. You know, having a clear and a pragmatic infrastructure roadmap that addresses growth, you know, system availability, security, global business continuity, disaster recovery, and the overall service management maturity
Yes.
is many times met with internal resistance because investing in that will create resourcing conflicts with immediate needs of the business. The CIO's role in collaborating with the business to ensure that infrastructure has adequate ongoing investment both during good and bad times cannot be underestimated, I think.
That's great.
And also globalization of the infrastructure management has progressed rapidly in the past few years. I mean, we typically talk about application development being outsourced or offshore and so on. But recently, in the recent 5 years, I would say infrastructure management as well has been gone global.
Mm-hmm.
With the goal of a 24/7 model, reducing IT operating costs.
Yes.
And so on. Functions such as, you know, application firewall support when systems go down and so on
mm-hmm.
during the night. Help desks, remote management of data centers.
Mm-hmm.
They've all gone global.
Yes.
And these IT companies across in Asia and other places have established very robust practices that we are leveraging now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of on the infrastructure front, I think.
Let me, if I can ask a follow-up there, Narup, what do you see as the balance between outsourcing one's infrastructure and keeping it inside? I realize, of course, there's no one-size-fits-all answer to that, but obviously there's been a trend now to outsource, as you point out, a greater portions of one's infrastructure. And I'm wondering if this is something that you think is a trend that will continue or one that will not continue, as the case may be, if there are organizations that believe managing their own infrastructure has strategic value.
You know, it's a cycle. I think where we are now is that most companies, the companies are starting to want to own their hard assets. So data center outsourcing, which was in vogue 10 years ago,
yes.
15 years ago,
yes.
is no longer in vogue. Okay, so people want to keep their own data centers. So you'll see many companies actually pulling back the data centers in-house.
Mm-hmm.
However, they do not mind the data centers being managed by external entities.
I see.
Even though they own the data center, the management of the data centers, monitoring the data center, monitoring the network, and that can be done by others.
Yes.
And so the services side is being outsourced, if you think about
yes.
it. And so I think that's the trend right now, mm-hmm. is to own it, but outsource the management of it.
Understood, yep.
Okay, so that's my take.
That's great.
So looking ahead, I mean, the CIO's job is not going to change, right? I mean, the CIO should and will continue to focus on all the traditional metrics, you know.
Mm-hmm.
IT operating costs, you know, being a very important one.
Yes.
Productivity, speed to market, globalization, risk management, and, of course, innovation. But we are in a stage where today, in the near term, industry consolidations is happening across pretty much all verticals.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to drive significant activity for CIOs as they rapidly reduce technology footprints to drive out costs now.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these mergers and acquisitions going on right now in the financial service, space, travel space, and pretty much in the telecommunications, it already happened.
Exactly.
But it's still going on.
Yes.
The whole consolidation approach. So I think that's going to drive a lot of work.
I see.
But in the longer term, I see concepts of what I call global collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
Another concept which is I call instantaneous information taking shape.
Mm-hmm.
As businesses seek to be global and operate in location where talent is readily available.
Yes.
They will need to operate seamlessly in a truly 24/7 environment to fully leverage the global model.
Yes.
So I see that need driving technology innovation in the collaboration space, including things like integrating applications within workflow management infrastructures, and then significant innovation in the whole collaboration tool space itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then language management capabilities as we
Great point.
Enter diverse workforces
mm-hmm.
across the globe. So I see a lot of money going into that and a lot of innovation happening. And then within service organizations, whether it is financial services or whether you're a customer of an airline,
mm-hmm.
clients continually seek transactional information as close to real-time as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make a trade. I want to know what happened to my portfolio right
exactly,
now.
Exactly.
right? And this, while that I can, that's a good example for a financial kind of institution,
Yes.
but it is true in other verticals as well, whether it is travel or healthcare or whatever.
Exactly. And I imagine also in some ways it's because we all are consumers, for instance, of banks and financial institutions where that information is so readily available. I imagine there's pressure on other industries that don't necessarily think about it in those ways by virtue of the fact that their customers are getting used to it in one set of services or products that they're engaging with. And therefore there's kind of like a tendency now for that expectation to grow around other sorts of services. Is that fair?
That's right. It will. I mean, as a consumer, I want to know everything now. Right?
Exactly.
And so, and it is, and that's going to continually drive innovation, I think, and advances in areas such as, you know, high-speed computing, you know, database management, you know, the whole data compression and transport technologies
mm-hmm.
to move information across the globe, and many other areas. So the challenge for CIOs is going to be, you know, how do I bring these advancements? How do they bring these advancements into their own organization to drive significant business value
mm-hmm.
through, you know, some sort of an orderly change management? Because bringing any of these innovations in requires a lot of change, a lot of turmoil inside the organization.
Yes.
And so the role of the CIO is that it's got to be change, is a change agent.
I see.
Taking advantage of what's going on in the marketplace, and then figuring out how to best the best way to bring it in and help your own organization.
That's great. Well, Nirup, this has been a really wonderful conversation. Thank you so much for joining us on the Forum for World Class IT, and thank you for sharing your ideas.
Thank you, Pete. It's a pleasure always.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. This forum has been created so that we might have a series of discussions with a variety of IT leaders to understand, evaluate, and define world-class performance as it relates to Meta Strategies' five principles of world-class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it's nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in a reactive mode, constantly fighting fires. If systems and hardware work reliably, on the other hand, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It's important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and quality assurance, through to support and all other aspects of the IT department, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming crucial to corporations, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metisstrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metisstrategy.com. Our sound editor is Christian Dooley. Our theme music was written by David Arman. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.